everyone. My name is Shahrzad.
Hi, Shahrzad.
Welcome to Fam for All Moms. This is my other voice. We have a guest, and I'm not going to do a long intro because I want you to hear every word she has to say. Catherine Sellery is a TEDx speaker. She is the founder of ConsciousParentingRevolution.com. She teaches courses on conscious parenting. She is an expert in her field. She has grown kids.
She has grown. Yeah, she literally has her own grown kids.
Which is a different perspective because I feel like we get a lot of moms with younger kids. So it's really nice to talk to a mom who's got kids who are in their
mid-20s.
So you guys are going to love what she has to say. Thanks so much for being on here. I'm so happy. Neither one of us have met you in person, but I did a little stalking of you, and I'm so pumped to have you as a guest on here. So thank you for taking the time out of your day.
Yes. No, I'm thrilled. Thank you for inviting me. Delighted to be here.
Where are you?
Right now I'm in Venice Beach.
Oh, okay. California.
Yeah, so we're actually not far from you. Yeah. It's funny.
We're in Culver City right now.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. My daughter just graduated from USC. We were there this morning getting her out of her apartment.
Oh my God.
I know. It's huge. It's so big. We just did the picture, like, it's over, check the box, you graduated.
How exciting. I mean, but she didn't get to walk.
She didn't get to walk. You know, we did it from a sofa. We just, you know, we watched. She actually graduated a year early, and it was kind of a do I, don't I. And now we look back at that decision and think it was providential. Like, if anyone was ever going to choose to graduate early, this was the year, people.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Right? Yeah. I know. So tell me about how many kids you have.
I've got two. You know, just background, we've been in Hong Kong 30 years.
Oh.
So my kids were born overseas, raised overseas, and really, like, coming to America for university. My son's 25. He's in San Francisco now, and he went to school in the Bay Area. He's now an architect working up there. And our daughter, Pia, graduated from Hong Kong International School and then moved to LA to start USC 3 years ago.
Wow.
And we have had a house. I grew up in Colorado. We've always had a house there. So we started spending more time. And then, you know, things kind of, like, the world went, you know, a little crooked, like all the protests in Hong Kong and then the COVID thing. And just, like, we don't know where we really need to be.
Right.
But we've started a little home here in LA because our daughter's going to be actually working at USC next year full time. She's got two research positions. So she's running a couple of labs. So, yeah, it's really cool. So, and I love this area. So I'm like, wow, this is beautiful.
Right. It's not hot and humid and no typhoons or anything in Hong Kong, right?
No kidding. In fact, it's darn right chilly.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can see I'm like bundled up, and, you know, half the time I'm like, I need a heater.
Yeah.
I think LA and the beachy areas of LA are the hottest, like, in August, September, October. Like, there's been so many 90 degree days in October. So you'll get your heat if you stay long enough.
But yeah, I might go to Denver.
Oh yeah. So I was gonna say, where in Colorado did you grow up?
I grew up, do you know the area pretty well?
My mom grew up in Boulder, so I know
Boulder-ish.
And I'm obsessed. Anybody who knows me knows I'm obsessed with the Broadmoor.
Oh, I love the Broadmoor.
I love it so much. It's my happy place. I go every year except this year because COVID. But ever since I started going, like, 7 years ago, I've gone every year. And my mom used to go there as a kid. And now it's just, like, my happy place. So, yeah.
It's totally. I mean, we used to go there when I was a kid, too. We would go up to the Broadmoor and spend the weekend. And, you know, it's like an hour from Denver. So it's really close. And, you know, I love Colorado. You're just right there at the foot of the Rocky Mountains. And it's so easy to drive up to Georgetown or Breckenridge or Vail. And it's an hour and a half. It's just spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, there are just so many beautiful places on the planet to be.
Yeah. That's true. That is
true. Are you guys Coloradans or LA, or where are you from?
I'm a California native. So I grew up in the Bay Area. I was technically born in Oakland, but my mom was going to grad school at Berkeley. So we were living in, I had my first few years living in Berkeley student housing while my mom was getting her master's.
Wow.
And my dad was getting his master's at Santa Clara. And but then we grew up mostly in Santa Cruz, and then Cupertino is where I call home. So, but I haven't lived there for a long time. I went to UCLA, so I've been here for 18, 19 years. So
wow.
Now LA is home.
Yeah. But I'm from the Southwest, though. I'm a New Mexico girl, so I'm really familiar with Colorado.
Oh, totally. Is that like Albuquerque or
I went to school. So I right outside of Santa Fe. I grew up in a little town called Pecos, New Mexico.
Okay, well, Santa Fe, New Mexico is another one of those, like, I don't know, divine places on the planet.
Yep. It really is. Santa Fe is gorgeous. I need to go back there.
Yeah, totally. Well, maybe we'll have coffee, people.
I know, yes. Exactly. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about your background so our listeners can know more about you.
Yeah, totally. So literally when my son was born, about 2 years into it, I was a professional. My husband's a professional. We were both working in Asia, and we were kind of like deer in headlights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was sort of like, what do we do with him now? Like, you know, we just didn't know how to respond to behavior, you know, that needed something from us. And so we looked for a class and we found one, and it changed our lives. It changed both of our lives. It was an incredible course. And I was a metals trader. I was trading commodities and had been brought to Asia to do that. And so that was kind of like my job. But what I found that I was passionate about was actually communication and connection and supporting changes in behavior that anyway, it kind of became my new career. And I spent the last 25 years training with the likes of Marshall Rosenberg, who was the founder for the Center for Nonviolent Communication, and Thomas Gordon and Eugene Gendlin. And these were the people that were actually mentored at the University of Chicago by Carl Rogers. And I know Rogers has his own papers here in California, I think at UC Santa Barbara, if I'm not mistaken. But he was, you know, he was the one who was behind the scenes kind of mentoring them. And then Gordon went on to be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 3 times for all of his work. And I just, it became my passion. And so about 12 years ago with Dr. Louise Porter, who wrote the book, Children Are People Too.
Yep.
She and I and another colleague created a program where we sort of brought the best of the best together, which really is a conscious sort of approach to parenting, with the understanding that so often we're responding to behaviors outside of us, not really around what's going on for the other that gave rise to their behavior, but really from what's happening inside of us without a deeper understanding of conflict. This has sort of created the whole program that I've been running for a really long time and trained thousands of parents in this guidance approach to parenting instead of a authoritarian approach to parenting, which activates retaliation, rebellion, and resistance.
So I saw that on your website. I'd love to break that down a little bit more so that anybody listening could understand. Will you explain what you mean when you say conscious parenting? Like if I think it might be easy to, if you give us a scenario, like my kid is acting up, what does a conscious parent do versus an authoritarian parent? Is that authoritarian
parent? Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, when I talk about conscious parenting, I think if I'm going to use an authoritarian approach, mm-hmm. it's good for me to be consciously aware of what I activate when I approach conflict resolution with that mindset. So an authoritarian approach, which is mostly what most of us have grown up with, is very much a do as you're told, mm-hmm. obedience and compliance, because I said so. And that's how I stayed in the good graces of those around me.
Right.
And often that meant my side was not understood, or I felt marginalized, or I learned not to speak up. And that is all really dangerous programming, because everybody has their perspective. And a conscious parent would use the guidance approach to address any conflict and would not look at it as disrespectful or disobedient if the child doesn't do as they're told.
Okay.
But would look at it through a lens of, if they're saying no to me, there's something inside of themselves that they're saying yes to. I wonder what that is. Mm-hmm. And just be curious about it rather than looking at it as disrespectful or, you know, obedience to me is actually not what anybody if they really thought about it once. What they want is cooperation.
Right.
What they want is ease. What they want is harmony. They think the way to get that is to create a cornerstone of dependence and fear in the child by using what we call an external locus of causality, rewards and punishments. If I use something outside of them to goad them into it, maybe I have to create some fear in my dynamic so that they know that I've got power over them. But whenever you create that, you actually pay for it. You pay for it through a resentment flow, which may be really obvious, door slamming, I hate you, mommy. If you've got a really strong child that wants to really show you what they're feeling, they may do those kinds of behaviors. You could get other behaviors which are very hard to detect, but they're subtle and they last over time. And a child who's more of a belonger won't risk their loss of connection with you by really acting out what they feel inside, but it still hurt them and they're carrying it and it's going to show up later. And it causes confusion about when do I get to honor my inner voice and do I get to honor my voice? Or is it always seen that me speaking up for me, if I'm a child, is going to be called disrespectful?
You know what I love?
I know what you love. You love a glass of wine.
I do. I love Usual Wine so much, you guys. We've talked about it before. Each bottle is 6.3 ounces, which is the equivalent of like a really heavy pour, a really good glass of wine, like the perfect glass of wine, not the stingy kind. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, yes, like that's the kind of glass of wine I want. I had a couple family members over the other day and everybody was blown away by the shape and design in the bottle. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. It's like one bottle per person, mm-hmm. you know,
and everybody can, should be.
It is.
I never finish a bottle of wine, and Arun always is like, I don't want to open a bottle of wine because I know you're only going to have a glass.
Yeah. Well, this is perfect for you.
I know.
Because you're a one and done kind of girl.
I am a one and done kind of girl with wine. And, you know, I love that these are low carb. They have 0 grams of sugar. You know, you can get a red blend, a rosé, or a sparkling white wine called a brew, and they're all delicious.
Yeah, everybody that's had the Usual Wines at my house is really excited about them. And you can get this variety pack that comes with red, rosé, and the Brut. So, so much fun. You guys can go check out their website at www.usualwines.com and use our discount code FAM, F-A-M, for $8 off your very first order. And, you know, try a glass of wine on us.
Cheers.
You are welcome.
I try to be a conscious parent all the time, but we come into these moments, right? Where I'm sure parents tell you this all the time. Like, for instance, you're trying to get your kid ready in the morning and you have 10 more minutes. But like my toddler, who's 3, right? He just wants to play right now, right? And it's, you know, it's like, but you need to get dressed or we have to change your diaper right now. He's still in diapers. You know, it's like this kind of like, okay, I don't have the time to go through the motions of being this conscious parent with you where I'm going to be like, well, what is it that you want to do, right? Instead, I'm like, you need to get dressed, you know, right? Like, so I think that's where it becomes hard to put this into practice, right? Is because there are the like constraints of real life too. So how do you coach parents into this?
And, you know, I love your example. You know, this is where the rubber meets the road and, you know, especially with young children of this age. So we know that transition is usually really difficult for kids. And it can be the transition from, as you said, you know, getting out of the house. It can be transitioning just from waking up to getting out of bed. It can be from that to getting their teeth brushed or having breakfast or all of those little tiny things that are transitions. And a couple of points. Number one is not every child is an auditory sequential learner. So if you want to take pictures of them doing the tasks like brushing their teeth or getting breakfast or just those little walking out the door, take a picture of them doing it. And I would love to get your feedback. You know, do it right away. Go home and do it. Everybody's got an iPhone. Everybody's got a printer. And you make a little deck of cards for them. And you start to give them the opportunity to do it from themselves, you know, with an internal locus as opposed to externally making them. So you start to do a lot of things to prevent the crisis in the first place. An ounce of prevention is worth, you know, a pound of flesh. It really is. So set it up for everybody to feel successful. Give them the deck of cards about these are the things that have to happen when you get up in the morning. And then they can start being more responsible for creating those outcomes.
Wait, that's such a cute idea. So you take a picture printed out of all their little things that they're supposed to do right in the morning. So, and then they have their own like independence and they know like
agency.
They can, yes, yes.
You're giving them a chance to do it right.
Right.
We're usually always focused on when they didn't get it right. And I like to shift the whole game to what could I have done to create? I'm like a major upstream gal. Mm-hmm. What can I do upstream to create different outcomes? And part of this with children who are highly autonomous is they want to be self-directed. Mm-hmm. And this outer direction thing just wears them down, wears you down too, right?
Oh, yeah. I say this with my toddler a lot lately. He's just so adamant about doing things his own way. And it turns into, especially with my husband and him, like they get into, like they're just head to head, you know? And then my husband gets so frustrated, he calls me in and he's like, you have to do this because he's not going to do it. He's not going to let me do this.
I love it.
Yeah. So it turns into, you know, so I definitely want to get this down, right? Where it's like, we're fixing this. Something that I saw with my son, we have a sleep trainer who, you know, I talk to every once in a while over text message and stuff. And we used her advice when our now toddler was an infant. So I texted her not too long ago. She had like kind of checked in and I was like, you know, he's just not, you know, sleeping on his own anymore. We have to sleep with him or he comes to our bed in the middle of the night and all that stuff. And she gave us all these tips. And one of them was to put 3 post-it notes on the wall when we put him to sleep and just say like, listen, you've got 3 chances to get out of bed or whatever. And if I have to pull all 3 of these post-it notes, I'm going to close the door on you. And so I know it's like this, like, it sounds scary. And I was like, I don't know. We're going to like pull all 3 of them within the first minute. And she's like, every parent says this, but most parents never have to pull all 3 of these because your child, you give your child a chance to make the decision. What do you think of a technique like that? Like what kind of, and by the way, that worked completely. I have not pulled any more post-its since like the second day that we started doing that.
Interesting. I guess I would want to find out why.
Yeah.
And if it was because your child was afraid?
Huh, maybe.
So because to me, when I hear this approach,
yeah,
and I'm just curious, I don't actually know why, but I'd like you to ask him.
Yeah, if he's scared.
Well, just ask him, you know, hey, I noticed that you stopped coming into the room. I wanted to check in.
Yeah.
Did you notice within yourself why you changed your behavior?
I will ask him that in a different way. I'll be like, I have to figure out how I word this to him. But yeah, I think, you know, there are these like different things. I think that's also one of the issues, right, is that we pick up so many different techniques and tips from people.
We do. We're inundated. It's so many different things around us that you really do have to be centered within yourself. And when you hear someone's perspective or idea, you can't just say yes or no to it. I think you have to kind of take it inside of yourself and be with it and sense into, yeah, that's also true for me, you know, in order to figure out I call them the outer voices, which are the outer voices that actually resonate with your inner sense of things. And so, you know, what I'm initially thinking about is that the guidance approach to parenting is based on the idea of someone changing their behavior from within. Mm-mm. And for the reasons that we would hope that they would do it. So that's why I'm just curious about what the reasons were for the change in behavior, because I know that you can use an authoritarian approach to discipline and you will create behavioral change. There's no doubt about it. But rarely do you create the changes that you wanted for the reasons that you wanted. Mm. So for argument's sake, if I were to use threats and someone recognizes that I actually do have power over their access to these preferred activities, for example, they recognize that if they don't do what I tell them to do, my threat will prevent them from being able to meet one of their needs. And so they cooperate with me on the basis of, if I don't, you have the power over me to limit my access.
Right, like closing the door.
So they have, they exactly, just like that. So they are making the choice out of the fear of what will happen to them if they don't do what I want.
So what would be, so in the type of parenting, conscious parenting that you teach, what would be a preferred method, I guess, to do this? Not that, I mean, I guess I'm not really implementing it, but.
What I know is that you would like your child, I'm guessing, and you can check in with me and tell me what you think. It seems like what you want is him to be aware and considerate of what's your needs. Is that right? You would like him to change his behavior on the basis of, hey, I recognize mom also needs to rest.
Yeah. Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I want her to also meet her needs. Isn't that really what you would like, is that he changes behavior on the basis of consideration for other people?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what my husband wants. Because there are times where my husband, like, he has a harder time, I think, wrapping his head around the fact that, like, he is always on as a dad, right? Like, I think moms a lot of the time, like, stereotypically fall into the, like, well, I'm always at your service, right? Whereas, like, I think he, especially in these days when we're all home, he has this hard time where it's like, well,
but what about my time?
Yes, exactly.
That I need. And this is also, so this is where, you know, the goals of a guidance approach are different than the goals of an authoritarian. A goal of an authoritarian is really, I want a change in behavior. I want you to do as you're told. I want obedience and compliance. And I don't really care what your reasons are for doing it. So it's okay with me if you do it out of the fear that you have developed because I have power over you. There is very rarely that second level of feeling into why someone's changing their behavior. With the guidance approach, I would say it's almost only about the why. I don't want you changing your behavior out of fear for me. In fact, if you're doing it for that reason, I'd rather you not do it. I want you to actually feel into your own sense of it's your value to take other people's needs into consideration. And you're learning how to do that. And therefore, whether someone has power over you to make you feel bad or to prevent your access, whether they have that power or not, you start to self-adjust based on having actually integrated this sense of other people's needs matter, not just my own.
I feel so lucky that our episode is sponsored by Anastasia Beverly Hills Brow Products. I'm such a fan of Anastasia. I've seen her content before. I know she's been in the brow business forever. She looks great.
She's a boss, first off, but I associate her with Jennifer Lopez brows. Oh. That's exactly what I think of when I hear Anastasia Beverly Hills. And she's the person that got me into my brows. There was a time when I didn't pay attention to my brows at all. Sad. And now I do completely. It's like I can't leave the house without my brows done. And I love using the brow definer because it's got this triangular tip. It's really easy to outline and fill in my brows. And, you know, it's got this like kind of like a pigmented wax. And I really like that because I feel like it stays in place for me and it really makes my brows look fuller. And I love the clear brow gel.
I'm a big fan too. We've been talking about brows. You know, now is the time where people are really making their brows pop. People yep. are rocking their masks. Lips are out, brows are in. And, you know, if you want to use the best brow products in the U.S., start with Anastasia Beverly Hills Brow Products. The Brow Wiz is so easy to use because it's got everything you need in one product. It's got your little retractable tip that's just great and gives the perfect amount of color for your brows. And then it's got a spoolie on the end so you can really fill everything in. Make your brows look blended, defined. I love to set my brows with a clear brow gel. You know, there was a period of time where I didn't have clear brow gel in my life, and I regret that period. I'm glad that we're back together, because also some days when I can get away with just clear brow gel, just by like a little bit of fluffing and combing and grooming. So we've got a little discount code for you. Are you ready? If you guys go to AnastasiaBeverlyHills.com today and use the promo code FAM, F-A-M, you can get 15% off your first order. That's A-N-A-S-T-A-S-I-A, BeverlyHills.com, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Just use promo code FAM at checkout. I'm just thinking about, man, I've already ruined so many things in my son's life. Like, I'm thinking about all the times I've yelled at my poor kids and then felt so bad about it after, right? That, like, just intense regret. I've actually cried and apologized to my kids for losing my mind with them. And, you know, I truly feel like just the lowest form of scum after some of the times that I've yelled at them. And I think back, like, I remember getting yelled at like that by my parents, and the same thing, they'd be like, God, I'm so sorry I yelled at you. And I'm repeating that behavior with my kids. And selfishly, it makes me feel bad after I yell at my kids. So from that perspective, I don't want to yell at them. But also, you know, more importantly, I don't want my kids to, I don't want them to get yelled at all the time. You know, I would love for my kids to have their own agency over the things they want to do and not be scared of me, right? And one thing that I'm so guilty of is, like, I tell them that if they don't do X, they don't get Y. You know, if you don't do whatever, you're not going to get, like, maybe a cookie at the end of the week or
we do the same kind of things.
I bribe my kids. And, you know, I would love to infuse a lot more conscious parenting and disciplining. I don't even know if that would be the right word.
It is discipline. And that's the part I always like to emphasize, because there's no model for this.
Right.
So, you know, the first thing I want to say to you is that, you know, all that mommy guilt, I'm like sending my hands, I'm giving you love, and also offering you the chance to just really have self-compassion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Because what you're really doing beautifully is you're modeling for your kids. You're not perfect.
That is, I am modeling that very well.
But actually, that is so huge.
Yeah.
And I really want to emphasize that if we can teach our children that we see within ourselves how we blow it, and how we also have the ability to come back and say, gosh, I really want to do over.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't me at the best. That was me at the end of my bandwidth. And I just wanted you guys to know, I can see that I didn't handle that well. And you're doing it already. And I'm so bad. You know, I'm really wishing that we could do a do-over. That gives them permission to blow it without them being punished for bad behavior.
Right, right.
So the problem with the treats, the stars, the this, the that, the other thing, is that it all creates what I put under this huge heading of changing people's behavior on the basis of what you do to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's a behavioralist approach. It's using rewards and punishments as a manipulation to get the behavior you want. What it fails to recognize is that, first of all, I mean, literally, Gordon was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 3 times for what I'm about to tell you, is that when you use that approach to problem solving, you activate retaliation, rebellion, and resistance. He called it the 3 R's. And then Dr. Porter, in her research, found that 75% of behavioral disruptions are the 3 R's. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that means when you look at the field of disruptive behaviors, 75%, 3 out of 4 were created by your approach to discipline. You activated them.
Shit.
Because you were dealing with... No, but the good news is that you can change it.
Right, right. Well, that was going to be a question. Like,
that's
is it too late?
Of all of this.
Okay, good, good, good,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, it usually helps. And I'm going to send you guys an invitation to my next course, which starts in September.
Okay.
And you can join. And what you're learning how to do is, and you'll see the minute you get into it, is it's not just communicating with children. It's communicating with any human being. And how do we approach conflict? Mm-hmm. And how do we approach, I mean, I'm trained as a mediator as well. So really, I just use the same skills in mediation that I would use with a divorcing parent situation that I would use with my own children with regard to any conflict. If I'm not happy about them lending the car, right now it's things like this, lending the car to their boyfriend, which is currently happening.
Yeah, yeah. How do you consciously parent that without, like, losing your shit, though? You know,
that's it's a conversation, right? Everything in life is a conversation.
What would be, like, the top 5, like, tips to start getting into this mentality?
All right. Well, the first one I'm going to go back to is when they say no to you, which I'm sure happens a lot.
Every day.
Every day. So change your mind about the no. Whatever you used to tell yourself about the no, which I'm guessing is disrespectful, disobedient, not doing, I mean, a lot of negative talk.
Right.
Instead of looking at it that way, literally from today forward, I want you guys to take a step back, kind of pause and listen to the no as saying yes to something inside of themselves.
Okay.
So if you hear a no, get curious about it. And I want you to also think of the no as coming from an adult.
like what we would say to an adult then, if an adult said no to us?
Well, you would look at it differently if it were an adult. You wouldn't go straight to disobedient.
Right.
Or disrespectful. You wouldn't even probably think about it as that like perspective. You wouldn't have that filter in consciousness, because I do a whole thing around the filters we have because it's a child specifically, and the ways we look at behavior and the words they might say to us because they're children is so different than if it were coming from an adult. So A, when they say no, step back. B, run it through your head. If this had been my best friend saying no, what would I have said to her or him? If this had been my husband, my mother, my friend, I mean, if this had been a no coming from someone else's mouth, I wonder, and play it out in your head, how would I respond to it? It's like you're doing an experiment right now, and here's our Petri dish. Mm-hmm. The Petri dish is you're going to start changing the way you see things. Because when I talk to parents all the time, I say, okay, we have three choices with any situation. We can modify ourselves in the way we see it. We can try to modify the other person's behavior, or we can change the environment. We can add things, or we can take things away from the environment to change what's going on in the environment. So right now we're going to do a little self-modification. Self-modification is step back from the no, ponder it, and wonder to yourself, I wonder what they're saying yes to. And then say, you know, depending on what the situation is, I mean, let's take your example. You said in the morning your son like dawdles or wants to play, has a hard time taking outer direction. Mm-hmm. So you could say to that, all the no's that you're getting when he doesn't do what you wanted him to, it looks like you're just having a really hard time doing what I want you to do because you're having so much fun playing. At which point I think he would say, yeah. And then you can say, I get it. You just don't like to even leave the house. It's so much fun to just hang out at home and play with your toys and do what you want to do. Yeah. And then if you feel like he totally gets that you got his point of view, his perspective, then you can say, hey, I'm just not even sure what to do right now because we do have to leave and I'm starting to feel anxious, right? And now you can start to add some of your own side to it. And this is really the art of perspective taking, being able to listen to what their side is, what they're feeling and needing. We're always listening for feelings and needs. And then you're sharing your feelings and needs. And you can do that whole thing. And hoped for is always self-started behavioral change. Always what we're hoping for is creating the conditions for self-started behavioral change. So there's nothing that trumps it. Self-started behavioral change doesn't cost us anything. We don't activate the three R's. We're respectful. We're modeling what it looks like to be respectful. We're modeling what it looks like to listen to other people's perspectives. We're doing all the modeling, which teaches them how to do it.
Right.
Right. So it's like fabulous. The second thing I would recommend is that we start solving our problems in something other than the problem zone.
I haven't seen little Isla in so long. It makes my heart hurt. How is she doing?
Isla is doing great. Right before I came over here, we were actually playing with her latest crate from KiwiCo. And if you guys haven't heard about KiwiCo, it's awesome. For her age, she gets the Panda Crate, which is for ages 0 to 2. But they have tons of different projects and different crates for all different ages. And that's one of the things that I really love about KiwiCo. We get a different crate for Nikosh. He falls into the koala crate. There are lots of fun projects for both of them in each of their crates that are, you know, either art-based or science-based. And I love that because it takes all the guesswork out of it for me, because I'm not trying to figure out what it is that's going to stimulate their minds.
Same. Idris is obsessed with his Kiwi crate, and that's primarily for ages 5 to 8. And he just turned 6 not too long ago. And I really love it because it delivers young innovators all the materials and inspiration needed for fun and hands-on projects that explore art, science, and engineering. I have given him this crate and let him go sit outside and just play. And it's such a nice change from just really being inside. And I mean, really the extent of my like crafting skills is like a piece of paper and a couple colored pencils. And I say, have fun, or maybe I'll print something off the computer for them to color in, but I'm just not that crafty of a person. So these crates are really great. They have crates for all different ages, anything from 0 to 104.
KiwiCo is redefining play with hands-on projects that build confidence, creativity, and critical thinking skills. And there's something for every kid or every kid at heart, even if you're 104, at KiwiCo.
Get your first month free on select crates at KiwiCo. kiwico.com/fam. That's kiwico.com/fam. FAM.
So we actually get to pick when we solve our problems. Nobody ever thinks about this. But if you start to create upstream models, you actually think to yourself, God, you know, every morning for the last 3 years, it's been hard to get out of the house. Mm-hmm, right. I bet tomorrow it's going to be no different. So right now, when we're all lovey-dovey, I think I'm going to talk about that problem now. Mm. So it's probably the afternoon before tomorrow morning. And you start talking about, you know, gosh, it seems like our mornings are just really tough. I hate that we get, you know, so ooky with each other at the beginning of the day. And I bet they don't like it either. And so there's going to be a lot of, yeah, you know, I don't like it either, Mom. And what do you think we could do about that to make it less ooky? And you're problem solving in advance. And you're kind of going into what I call collaborative problem solving, where you're brainstorming and everybody's ideas matter. And then, is there anything else? No, that's all I can think of. What about you, Mom? And you get all the ideas out on the table. The preposterous ones, all of them, none of them get ictionate. And then when there's nothing else to share as a possibility, you say, well, should we go ahead and look at each one and see if any of these would work for us? And then you go into, yeah, this one seems like it would work for you and me. Do you agree, sweetie? Yeah, I think that's, let's try, Mom. And then you go into, let's pick it. Let's try it out for the next couple of days. And then we can go back and assess if it was working on like Friday. What do you think? So you give it a couple of days, 1 or 2 days, to see if it works out. You put the cards in place. You give them a chance to start to see all the things that you want them to do in the morning so that they have a chance to implement on their own. The less we are writing their little asses to do stuff, the better.
Right.
And it communicates, I believe in you.
Mm.
It communicates, I know you've got this.
Mm-hmm.
It just changes the whole game.
Right.
We're setting up a whole different framework. I never want anyone to do anything for me out of fear or dependence.
Right.
Ever. I can remember when my children were little, there were moments where I would think to myself and I would say it out loud because I'd been on this road from the time my son was two and my daughter came 4 years later and was a completely different personality. So my son was what we call the belonger. He just wanted to do things out of consideration and didn't ever want to upset anybody. He was more in the people pleaser category. And my daughter was a complete autonomous person who was thoroughly self-directed. And the last thing that would ever work was barking orders at her. So I really got to learn how to parent this and this, and they're completely different. I thought I was going to be a pretty good parent to the second because I'd had all this practice and had been so seriously dedicated. And it turned out I was a beginner all over again.
I feel like to be a conscious parent, you have to be so patient.
Mm.
Don't you? I mean, because...
Or you have to be able to be consciously aware when you're not. And to be able to say, my bandwidth right now is, I have no bars left.
Right.
And so I'm just so worried that because I have no bandwidth, I'm not going to be able to take care of our dynamic. So I think I've got to go take care of me right now. And that gives them permission to also recognize within themselves when they have no bandwidth left either. You're giving people a language to express what they're feeling and needing. And the more you can express and articulate what you're feeling and needing, the less you do it through behavior. Let's put that in tip number three.
Okay.
Everybody needs to learn a language of feelings. You know, there's an expression, name it to tame it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you guys probably may have even seen the list that Brené Brown put out of the 30 words that everyone needs to be able to say. And she said, really, people know about three.
Mm-hmm.
Adults that are well-versed maybe have 5 words. But you know, you need to know 30. And the more granular, the better. So she talks about emotional granularity, the ability to be so precise and nuanced about what it is. The word that I know matches the thing that I'm feeling inside. And as you say it, you actually diffuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone else acknowledges it, rather than tries to convince you shouldn't be feeling that way, the more you diffuse. And Rosenberg would say, connect your feelings to your underlying needs rather than connecting your feelings to the stimulus external to you. So whenever you say you make me feel, it's a lie. And yet we live in a world of lies where we say all the time, you make me feel, as if it's someone else's responsibility to change your feelings, or as if they actually created the feeling within you, neither of which are true. And yet I would say tip number five, think of your own words and how you express yourself, and how often are you blaming other people for how you feel? How often are you hearing other people blaming other people for how they feel? It starts to communicate a fundamental lie that I am a victim to other people and that they make me feel, and vice versa. And then we just all go asleep, and there's this huge spell that's cast over us that we're victims of the world and we're not empowered to change our own feelings.
Right.
Mic
like
drop.
I
boom.
Know, wait. Tip four, just to be clear, was to know the words.
Yeah. And then let's go to one more tip, mm-hmm. is that the feelings come from the needs. And do you know what you need? Do you know what your needs are? Do you recognize needs are different than values? That needs are universal and everyone has the same core needs. You know, there's Maslow's hierarchy, and we know our basic needs, and we know our higher level needs, our needs for interpersonal relationships, our needs for belonging. We know our needs for mastery. We know all these needs. And yet very few people recognize that the feeling that's arising within them comes from whether the need is met or unmet. So as we begin to learn nonviolent communication, we begin to tune into, oh, this feeling is here. These needs are not met. No wonder I have this feeling arising within me. And this event outside of me stimulated all of this within me. And most of the time we blame the stimulus as if it were the cause. So there's another like thing that we become really consciously aware of. And then we could go down the road of being triggered. And when we're triggered, we really lose it, and we're in major overreaction and total blame. Right? And so it is the human condition that we are blaming all the time. So you must be so conscious to be able to keep catching yourselves in what I call the lies that we live by, to stop going down that road of unconsciously communicating from a place of just one thing after another that's just not true.
Wow.
I feel like I could listen to you talk all day, and you've done TED Talks before, and I totally see, I'm like captivated. I'm sitting here. I know you guys can't see me, but my eyes are open, and I'm just aggressively nodding like listening to every word that you say. I'm so fascinated by it. And I'm thinking about different areas of my life that I want to implement. I mean, obviously as a mom, how I want to implement these things in and how realistic I think it can be. You know, I'm just going over these scenarios in my head right now, too. And I definitely think it's absolutely worth trying,
definitely
right,
trying.
To have a more conscious approach to parenting.
Yeah.
Because I've seen different times when I've reacted to my kids' behavior in a softer way that they, I don't know, they listen more, right? Like, they're so happy when I'm not mad at them. It's an interesting shift. And we certainly have a lot of time to play around with different parenting techniques these days. So,
yeah, totally. You know, and I would just say back to when we see the behaviors that we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing we know is that 3 out of 4 times the behavior that's in my experience right now was activated by a controlling form of discipline. And whenever I use a controlling form of discipline, I will activate retaliation, rebellion, and resistance, the 3 R's. And there's also another like side to that. It's the fight flight response. So it's this power over that doesn't acknowledge the other person is experiencing something within themselves as well. And maybe they're drowning impolitely, just like you did the other day. Right. Because when we're drowning, we thrash around. It's never socially acceptable. And it appears that I certainly grew up in that world, and I'm imagining so did you guys, where if you can't drown politely, I won't be compassionate towards you. So you learn how to drown politely, or I will withhold my warmth and my compassion.
Mm-hmm.
When that is the very moment in everyone's life when they need our compassion the most and appear to deserve it the least.
Mm.
So if you just take that, let's throw that one in as the bonus tip.
Yes.
Let's take that tip and shift our perspective about drowning behaviors. Just period. Every time you see someone drowning, get out of judgment and get into wonder about what's happening inside of them that they have such little bandwidth for better behavior.
Mm, God, so compassionate.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I want to hug you.
Aww, let's do the virtual
hug. Those are
hug.
Illegal right now, sadly. We took up 40 minutes of your time and it flew by. I don't think I like blinked or breathed or anything. I was just consumed by every word that came out of your mouth. I love that.
I did too. I mean, tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yeah. So you guys go to theconsciousparentingrevolution.com. And I actually have a free opt-in gift. So you guys can go there and get my ebook.
Awesome.
And I do blogs every week, which are fabulous. So go and just, you know, once you opt in, you'll be on my list. You'll get my newsletters, which have the blogs every week. And then I'm starting another course September 28th. And so I hope to see all of you. Yeah, totally. It would be so fun.
Thank you.
But a shift in skills is what's needed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mindset shift.
Yeah.
And when you have the mindset without the skills, you may get really frustrated.
Right.
And even harder on yourself, where you really need the skill of self-compassion even more. So you give yourself the bandwidth to change. You know, what is it? 10,000 hours. If you play a sport, you know how hard it is to learn how to play it.
Yep.
This is just like learning how to play tennis or the piano or a language. It takes time and it takes grace and it takes a sense of humor with yourself and your children about, you know, I am not doing it great today, am I?
I got the sense of humor part down. Everything else I could use a little help on.
Aw, so good. Well, this has been so lovely. Thank you so much for letting me share my message and my perspective.
I could have listened to her talk for so long.
You know what? What's funny is I was kind of like, I wonder how many questions I could get in for my own purposes that she would actually answer. But I was like, okay, we're not going to take advantage of that. We need to get her tips in for everybody else. It's not the Susan hour. But it's very fascinating. And I think about this often now that Nikosh is a little bit older. It's like, I see all of this stuff that she's saying, like when I snap at him, it hurts him. Like it's not a like reaction that I want to see from him. And I feel it lately.
Yeah. And I really like that she said it's just never too late to try and implement these skills and this different approach. So I appreciate that because, you know, I was kind of in my head thinking, damn it, I've yelled at my poor baby so many times. And, you know, I'm somebody who can like lose my shit every now and then. And anyway, I really appreciated her time and expertise. I hope you guys did too. And you can find all her info in the description of the podcast. So I hope you guys enjoyed. Bye.
Bye.